Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not listening to this podcast, be sure to check out one of our others, like this one, The Grave Talks. Every week, I talk with individuals who've been affected quite intimately and personally by the supernatural. We hear their stories one-on-one in our conversations. In fact, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's two new episodes of The Grave Talks. And if you like it, just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe. Today on The Grave Talks, what's on the other side? A conversation with Rick Hale.
Well, first off, this is a memory that is burned into my brain for all time. Like, I will never forget why I'm involved in this field. Mm-hmm. When I was 8 years old, I was staying the weekend with my cousin at my grandparents' house in Franklin Park, Illinois. Now, for people who don't know what Franklin Park, Illinois is, Franklin Park is a large town on the northwest side of Chicago. So, you know, I'm sorry.
You're fine.
My dog is barking. I am very much a Chicago native. My co-host on my show, he never lets me forget that by constantly making fun of my accent. But so late one night, my cousin and I, we had just got done watching a Cubs game, and it was in September of 1982. Of course, they lost because that's what the Cubs do, but we love them anyways.
Sure.
And so my cousin had already fallen asleep, and I've always been very much a night owl, even as a little kid. So, you know, for people who don't know what these old flats look like in Franklin Park or in the Chicagoland area, you have the front room, and then you have a long hall that leads off towards the back. And that's where you find like bedrooms and the kitchen and all that. It was a very old building. I think it was like 150 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. So my grandmother always left the bathroom light on for us kids, because this long hallway did not have a light in it. So I got up and I had to use the bathroom. So I'm walking towards the bathroom and I see the light, and in the bathroom, I see like somebody moving around, like a shadow. And my cousin was sleeping, you know, not 5 feet away from me. And my grandparents had been fast asleep for a long time. And in their bedroom, they had a bathroom anyways. So they wouldn't have come out there to use that bathroom. And we were the only people in the house. So I'm walking up to the bathroom door, and then all of a sudden the light just turns off. Now I'm 8 years old and it is pitch black. It is not, it is an unenviable position to be in at the time. And the door opens up and this woman steps out. And it's not my grandmother. My grandmother was Native American. She was mm-hmm. Cherokee. So she was very, very short. She was a very short woman, maybe about 4'10", 4'11". She was tiny. And this was a very tall woman. And I'm looking up at her, and she turns around, and she looks at me and feels my chin. And when she feels my chin, I just feel like this static electricity go throughout my entire body. Like I'm charged. And she says in a very beautiful but thick Irish accent, "My, what a fine young lad." And then she turns, walks towards the kitchen, and I just watch her as she fades away.
Yeah.
Now, I know that most people think, oh my God, this 8-year-old kid is terrified. That's not the case at all. I had a very good feeling about this person. I actually still get, I get goosebumps every time I tell this story. Mm-hmm. So I had very good feelings with this apparition. Of course, I didn't know it was an apparition at the time.
Sure.
And the very next morning, I'm talking to my grandmother, and it turns out that not only does my grandmother see her all the time, but my uncle Luis had seen her as well. And she told me, she's like, that's just Mrs. McNett, and you don't have to be afraid of her at all. So Mrs. McNett was the wife of the gentleman who owned my grandparents' house that they lived in.
Okay.
And he lived on the top floor. They lived on the main level.
Mm-hmm.
And she had died in 1972.
And she's still there.
Yeah, she had been dead for 10 years. And it turns out I wasn't the only person that had had an intense experience with her. My cousin Vicky, the Hale side of the family is originally from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the family, they still live down there. Well, once when she was a kid, Vicky had come to visit, and my grandparents, they had one of those old stoves that even when it was off, you still didn't touch it
because
you could, you might still burn yourself. So Vicky was telling me that she got a little bit too close, and she hears a woman with an Irish accent say in her ear, "Don't get too close now. You may burn yourself." So everybody knew that my grandparents' house was haunted.
Sure.
You know, for lack of a better term, inhabited, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew it. But as far as I know, me, my grandma, and my Uncle Luis are the only three people to have ever seen her, whereas everybody else has experienced, you know, things like, you know, like footsteps, cold breezes,
yeah,
taps on the shoulder, voices. And it's, you know, it's really sad to say my cousin, Luis Jr., we call him Booski. Booski contacted me a couple of years ago, and, you know, the sad news was, is my grandparents' house got torn down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I don't know. It's possible that Mrs. McNett might still be there,
mm-hmm,
tied to the ground. But yeah, that was a real intense first experience. And I know that a lot of people are like, you know, my first experience was real negative, man. And, you know, this ghost haunted me. But my first experience was very positive.
How do you think that then affected your future kind of outlook on this whole subject after, you know, literally almost having a warm and fuzzy experience with the dead?
Yeah. You know, I get that question a lot. And basically it set me on a path of looking into these things from a positive light,
mm-hmm,
you know, from about the age of 8 years old to 17, those were the times of study and research and reading everything that I possibly could. You know, I had two very good resources. My dad lived in Chicago, so I had the Chicago Public Library. My mother lived in Round Lake Beach, Illinois, which is, you know, like a stone's throw away from the Wisconsin border.
Sure.
So I had those two libraries that I could really count on. But the thing is back then it was still very much a taboo kind of thing. So you couldn't just walk into a library or a bookstore and find stacks and stacks of books. I was lucky if I found a few. So, you know, I read people like Hans Holzer, Peter Underwood, Elliot O'Donnell, Harry Price, Brad Steiger. I read all of those gentlemen. So I had like a real good base because they also had a way of approaching this from a very objective and very positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, my very first experience with the dead was very positive. My first investigation, it not so much.
No.
Yeah, my first investigation happened when I was 17 years old. I was just going into my senior year of high school. And I get a call from a friend of mine who was involved in this church ministry. At the time, I was, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say I was a religious person, but I was a person of some faith.
Sure.
Although I never abandoned this research and investigation. And so she called me up and she's like, look, I have this girl living with me right now. She's 16 years old and I'm going to call her Susie because I can't give her real name.
Sure.
And so my friend, we'll call her Denise. Denise tells me that ever since Susie came to visit, to live with us, because she was part of this ministry that helped kids get out of cults and abusive situations, She's like, ever since this girl came to live with us, strange things have been happening in the house. There's like immense drops in temperature. And, you know, this is Northern Illinois in September. Mm-hmm. So it's still very hot. And this was a double wide trailer and they didn't have any AC in here. So it was hot like all the time.
Yeah.
So she's like, even with the windows open, it was still extraordinarily cold in the house. She's like, things are moving. We're seeing weird black shadows. We were kind of wondering if you could come over here and take a look at this, because I know that you're into this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, sure. I was hanging out with my girlfriend at the time, told her what was going on. She wasn't very happy, but you know, I smoothed things over afterwards.
Yeah.
They're the very next day. So I get to Denise's house and I meet with Susie, a very sweet, very pretty girl. And with quite a story to tell. And where she was originally from, again, I can't really say, it's another Midwestern state.
Yep.
And she said that in her hometown, she was involved with this. The best way that I could possibly put it is in this satanic sex cult.
Well, who hasn't been in one of those, you know?
Right. I mean, I'm personally in one right now. It's awful. Get lucky all the time.
You're like, oh, you too?
Let's get together.
Yes,
you
know? But yes.
No, so she starts telling me this story that she is pregnant with the child of the leader of this group, and they called him Blade. I know that sounds really corny and cheesy, but that's what the dude called himself.
Yeah.
This is some Stranger Things shit right here.
I mean, are you at this moment, what is going through your mind? Are you thinking this is crazy? This can't be real. Or are you like, let's hear the story.
I'm getting to that.
Yeah.
I'm getting to that. So, she starts telling me that this leader cursed her with these huge black masses that kind of follow her around and do things in her presence. Move stuff, throw stuff, you know, whatever. And so I'm thinking, yeah, okay. Now I know about poltergeist phenomena. I had studied it extensively in the 9 years between having my first experience and this first investigation. So I'm thinking, yeah, right, to the satanic sex cult thing and the curse. But I'm thinking, okay, this might be a poltergeist situation. So Denise goes to bed in her room and Susie falls asleep on the couch in this adjoining room. And I'm in another room sitting in a chair. So I got, you know, my pen and my pad of paper, because we didn't have all these really super cool gadgets that we all use today in the field. So I had, you know, a tape recorder, a camera, and a pen and paper, pad of paper. So I'm taking notes of everything, you know, this time and this time. So about 1:15-ish in the morning, the temperature in the place just drops. Now I'm wearing shorts and I'm wearing a t-shirt and I am cold. Like I've never felt a cold like this before. And then all of a sudden, Susie wakes up and she says, Rick, they're here. So I'm like, okay, let's get this party started, right?
Yeah.
So I walk in the other room and it's colder than in that room than it is in the room that I was in. So I start speaking harshly to this thing. Now, I don't suggest that anybody ever does provoking, but I made it fashionable about 30 years before it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm speaking very harshly to this entity, not really believing that anything like this is there.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.